with Curtis Lewa.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
If you look at the maps, slowly but surely, step by step, the flu invasion, like locusts through a cornfield, is beginning to cut right to our tri-state area. In fact, let me be very clear that unlike other pandemics in the past, this flu actually has hit the heartland harder than it has any other part of our country. Normally, you experience it on both coasts, the West Coast and East Coast. The further you go in towards the Mississippi River, the less likely the flu will have an impact. And yet Kansas, that's right, per capita, per person, has been affected the most. But just yesterday, we were talking about this, and I had on Sid Rosenberg, our colleague from The Morning Show, the Imus in The Morning Show, where he does sports and contributes his commentary. And then So Nice, the Suits, the Muckers, the Muckety Mucks, back to back, belly to belly, have him come on with his own program with his partner, Bernard McGurk, right? From 9 to 12, before I come on with the brand new show, Curtis Sliwa and Rita Cosby, from 12 to 3. But what's interesting is yesterday he was a real Weisenheimer. True to his tradition as a chosen person, he felt, oh, Hashem will guide me through this with liquid penicillin, chicken soup made from Empire Kosher chickens, because we're the chosen people. We read Talmud, Torah. What does this Gentile, this person of no consequence, Curtis, know about the flu?
Oh, my God, you're like an old Jewish lady down at the pool in Delray Beach.
In Delray Beach, huh? And that was because what I do here each and every day is patrol, not as guardian angel. But I might as well be a self-appointed health inspector, because I experienced a while back, a few years ago, when I was doing the morning show with Ron Kuby, followed by Mark Simone. He was on from, I think, 10 to 12. And then it was Rush, and then Sean Hannity from 3 to 6. So we were experiencing one of these pandemics, and these guys, they all had their own remedies, you know, their own home remedies, obviously dependent on their politics, too. Kuby went down for the count, so I had to do the show solo. Mark Simone went down for the count. I had to do his show that same day. And then Hannity had the grip, and all of a sudden he couldn't talk, not because necessarily he was taken down by what comes back to back, belly to belly. First you get the shivers, then you start schwitzing, you feel like you have 104 fever. But he had the dreaded grip, which is mucus that surrounds your voice box. And your voice box, see, like I'm talking now, like the rest of you talk, you yentas out there. It's because your voice box is fluttering like a butterfly's wings when it comes out of its cocoon. But when the mucus saturates it, the voice box all of a sudden is stationary. It doesn't move. So it sounds like, you can barely talk, like you have laryngitis. And so he was down for the count. And my remedy was to take raw rubbing alcohol, put it in my nostrils with both my pinkies because it would act like a shield to any bacteria, any virus. Wash my hands, not with the normal soap or for the liquid soap, but rather with the rubbing alcohol over and over. And then I would wipe down the console. I would spritz each of the microphones in the studio that I do each night when I finish the Drive at 5 with Lysol. And most importantly, I would hit the men's room, because it's there that most of this germ, this virus, this flu, this bacteria is spread. Because naturally, people are touching everything. And like recently when I was in Grand Central Terminal, which has become like a third world terminal with the emotionally disturbed and the homeless. But still, you look at it and you say, oh, look at its grandeur, 105 years. And I went down to the men's room. And I watched man after man go in there. First off, they were busted urinals, they were busted toilets. But men would go in, take care of whatever it was that motivated them to be there. And most of them would walk out without washing their hands, which is spreading this flu everywhere, where people are coughing, they're hacking. And as a result, I have to end up spritzing everywhere I go. So here was the Weisenheimer, Sid Rosenberg, again, sticking the shiv in me.
I don't feel great tonight. My voice is starting to go. That could be the fact that I do 6 hours a day on radio. I'm not sure.
No, it's not 6 hours a day on radio. You've done that. You can handle that. You can handle more, Sid. It's that you were coming down with the first symptoms of the flu, and I'll tell you why. Because unlike your partner, Bernard McGurk, who is a neat freak, who is almost a germaphobe, not quite as bad as our president, but he's a germaphobe. I've heard Bernard McGurk in the bathroom when he goes in there and he's washing his hands, singing happy birthday to me, happy birthday to me, making sure that he fully washes his hands and rinses it out with warm water. What Sid Rosenberg does is he goes in there and I think he plays with his three-piece set. You know, he shaves himself down there below the navel. Can you believe this? But he doesn't wash his hands. What a guy. And this is a chosen person. Oh, come on, this Gentile knows more than that chosen person. So who was out today sick with the flu, coughing and hacking, and just like, oh, man, incapable of responding and coming in for the Imus in the Morning show and naturally his own show with Bernard McGurk? Well, it was our own Sid Rosenberg who just could not get up out of bed. He's probably listening right now. Guess what, Sid? You know who's coming in tomorrow to replace you? Bill O'Reilly. That's right, Bill O'Reilly, who's been exiled. He's coming in. He's going to be Bernard's partner. And guess what? Stranger things have happened, right? The resurrection of Bill O'Reilly. So if I were you, I'd get better quick. But then again, what do I know? I'm just a righteous Gentile. And what does this schmuck, no, make that this putz, this wannabe wasp, no, city councilman Mark Levine. Now, you know, whenever a Jew calls himself Levine and not like our Mark Levin, you know he's trying to be something that he's not. Pretentious, the a-hole that he is. He has not any medical experience whatsoever. He hasn't been involved in dealing with the influenza, the flu, nothing. But here was his advice to all of you.
And we have to combat the misinformation out there that these shots are ineffective this year. Every scientist in the country will tell you that getting a flu shot reduces your chance of contracting the flu, and if you should still contract it, it will lessen the symptoms.
Mark Levine, you are a schmuck, no, make that a putz. You know nothing about nothing when it comes to the flu and flu shots. So you're saying to me, this flu shot that only has a 10% working ability, whose mixture was put together last year, and everyone acknowledges it was the wrong formula, it's not working. I went to pick up my two kids, my two youngest sons, Carter and Hunter, in Forest Hills at the pediatrician this past Sunday. It was packed with families, with kids who are hacking and coughing and obviously had symptoms of the flu. And you know what the pediatrician told me, which is my advice to all of you? Don't get the flu shot because it doesn't work. It doesn't work. You're putting the flu into your system. If you haven't had the flu, you're giving yourself the flu. Does that make any sense? You don't have to have a medical degree. You don't have to be working at NYU Medical Center. You don't have to be working at Mount Sinai to be able to figure that out. This is stupid, though. This do not. But then again, maybe there is a different route. Maybe it's the godly route. Whether you happen to be a Jew and you believe in Hashem, or you happen to be a Gentile and believe in JC, maybe we ought to be following the dictates of the Holy Roller and advisor to our President of the United States in the White House, Gloria Copeland.
We've already had our shot. He bore our sicknesses and carried our diseases. That's what we stand on. Flu, I bind you off of the people in the name of Jesus. Jesus himself gave us the flu shot.
Jesus gave us the flu shot. Well, I want a rebate from Jesus. I want a refund because it ain't working, JC. And if it ain't you, I want it from Hashem or Allah or Buddha, or maybe any of the 4,000 gods, you know, with the elephant heads and hands and arms all over the place from the Hindu religion. I want a rebate. I want a refund. And look who else. Kid Sarcastic, Rich Cementa, producer for the Mark Levin Show, out with the flu. He was making fun of me yesterday because after the show, I was wiping down the console here in the studio, and I was spritzing all of the microphones with the Lysol because I didn't want anyone else from the day crew or the night crew to be passing this on. And I have a feeling, I was listening to Mark Levin last night, right before the handoff to John Batchelor. Right before the handoff, I heard the voice cracking ever so subtly. And I know what that is. That's the dreaded grip that comes from the beginning of the flu. So I'm hoping Mark Levin does not have the flu. But if you do, Mark, I've got the prednisone. I've got the little black bag of tricks. Yeah, it's steroids. It's steroids. And I realize with Mark Levin, that may put him right over the top with his high blood pressure and his testosterone crashing to his cranium. But I'm here at the ready with my little black bag, my colleagues. Elon Musk decided to base his blast of that space rocket that cost him $90 million into space with his Tesla on the front end of it. Base it on listening to Life on Mars when he was in a drug-induced psychosis, smoking ropes of dope years ago, and being a David Bowie fan. Now, I remember David Bowie. We saw him with a drop-dead gorgeous model Imam who was from Somalia. Meantime, we hear he had a little side action with Mick Jagger there. Yeah, the urge to merge. Oh, yeah, yeah, he went both ways. But that's not the point of this. The point is that Elon Musk has really entered into a battlefield by adopting the name of Tesla, his hero, the Serbian inventor. And those of you listening to radio right now, terrestrial radio, or if you're listening on the app or the streaming audio or your work computer, by whatever means you're listening, you got to understand that we were brought up to believe that it was the Italian Marconi that invented the radio. Oh, no, no, no. There are purists out there who believe that it was really Tesla, the Serbian who was given no recognition. And in the scientific community, oftentimes was a dollar short and a day late to Edison and Marconi. But he has projected the name Tesla out. And he just blasted that rocket, most powerful rocket in existence, more powerful than anything that NASA has, the Ruskies have, the Red Chinese have, the folks in India have, or even Israel has. And this is what he had to say after his successful launch yesterday.
So I think it's going to encourage other countries and companies to raise their sights and say, hey, we can do bigger and better, which is great. We won a new space race. Space races are exciting.
Well, I don't know if it's much of a space race because it's going to be in orbit around Mars in perpetuity, but a lot of valuable PR. I think we could all agree on that. But his company, Tesla, which is manufacturing cars and trucks, lost, now get this, alone in November of 2017, before the start of the year, $620 million. That's right, $620 million. So I have an offer to Elon Musk that could be very helpful to our country. The president of the United States tweeted out salutations and greetings and said, this is what private enterprise can do. And he's right. And the president recently, remember, in his State of the Union address said that for the $1.5 trillion he wants Congress to approve for capital improvements, infrastructure improvements, he wants some partnerships with private enterprise. And I agree. Here's the perfect match. Let's go to the audio tape after that smash-up crash of that Amtrak train on the way to West Virginia, right after the State of the Union address packed with Republicans as they crashed into a garbage truck, and the NTSB chairman talking about positive train control.
It knows where the train is, and it knows what the signals are showing. It knows what the switches are doing, the rail switches are doing. And if things are not like they should be, it will actually stop the train. The deadline is the end of this year, and we believe that the sooner it gets installed, the better, so that we won't be here at tragic accidents like we're looking at today.
That's the Northeast Corridor he's talking about, from Boston down to Washington. That is the profitable venture of Amtrak. The rest of it, well, it requires huge subsidies to sustain. Got that. But then all of a sudden, we saw the recent crash on the train that normally goes from Penn Station below us to Florida. Every day, there's a different train schedule. In fact, I've taken it back from Florida when I was a young little whippersnapper. And it was great. But this time it crashed because of a switch malfunction. And then the question was, are you testing your engineers for sleep apnea?
I'm extremely disturbed that the FRA has withdrawn this sleep apnea screening program, this proposal. It's unacceptable to me as the chairman of this agency.
Now, that's the Trump administration withdrew that. Why? It makes no sense. But think of it. We had an Acela train, right? This is the advanced train. Not quite the bullet train that I've ridden in Japan or France, but goes fast. Split in half. This national rail system of ours is falling apart. It's becoming a third world rail system. How about this? How about the president sit down with Elon Musk? I know he used to be part of his business council, and after Charlottesville, he left. But just a one-on-one meeting and say, hey, Elon, rather than lose $620 million as you did on Tesla last November, and that's the labor of your love, continue to do that. How about partnering up with the federal government in running Amtrak? Because you seem to be on the right track as opposed to government, which is not only spending huge amounts of money, but the system is in decay. It's failing. It's a third world system. I've taken railroads from Bombay to Madras in India. Now, the stink inside when you're packed in like sardines, not the butt, nothing to rave about. But I got there on time, and guess what? There was no accident. I think maybe it's time for that Amtrak federal government partnership with somebody like Elon Musk, or somebody like the billionaires out there, the robber barons that exist all over the place. Maybe Jeff Bezos. Maybe the guy who is the CEO of Apple, Tim Cook, or any of the other muckety-mucks out there. This could well be the theme song for Joe Pococo, former wartime consigliere and leg breaker for Governor Andrew Evilize Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Brutta Cuomo, King Cuomo I. And it's gotten down to that famous scene in The Sopranos where they were talking about a box of ziti.
How much is he into us for?
About 45 boxes of ziti.
King of Hearts.
45 boxes of ziti. You know what that would amount to? Let's see. That was an old Grover Cleveland, the old president on $1,000, 10 Benjamin Franklins. That's like 40 G's. A box of ziti is like $1,000. Anyway, on the line to discuss it is Ken Lovett, Albany bureau chief for New York's hometown daily newspaper, The Daily News. Thanks for joining us again, Ken.
Good to be here.
Now tell me, the judge allowed this to be played for the jury, one of the most famous scenes in the Sopranos series, the box of ziti scene, right?
Yeah, but the only way the jurors were able to see it is if they went on YouTube. The judge could not allow it to be played, but he did allow the prosecution to explain it and where it came from.
Why did the judge say you can't watch it or listen to it?
They probably felt it would have been prejudicial that, you know, it's not a mafia trial, and putting The Sopranos up there in full view would certainly make it seem that way.
Now, in addition to Pococo, the most well-known, there are three other Italian-Americans who are his sort of co-conspirators, right?
Yes.
So you could basically say it was a family of Italian organized crime, the Cuomo family, right?
I'm not going to go that far.
All right. So where are we in the trial right now, would you say, Ken?
Well, I mean, the superstar, the prosecution's star witness, Todd Howe, a guy who goes back to Mario Cuomo days, who worked for Andrew Cuomo when Andrew Cuomo was the HUD secretary under Bill Clinton, he's been testifying the last couple of days. A lot of stuff has come out. The question is, how legit is it? Because the defense today started the cross-examination and, as expected, is trying to portray Todd Howe as a liar, someone who has deceived everyone from his family and friends to bankers who's got all this debt piled up, that he's lied to everyone. Howe, of course, doesn't deny that he's lied and that he's gotten into trouble in the past, but he says he's not lying in this case.
Now, would you say he's believable because in the last case, remember, that had to do with the prosecution of the head of the Correctional Officers Union, Seabrook, the lead person who told us about how he tried to bribe de Blasio, Reichnich, Remember, the jury didn't believe Reichnitz because he said, this guy, he's like a liar. Do you think Hal has sort of more juice with the jury, or the fact that the cross-examination of him is proving that, man, this guy has lied before, could be the downfall of this particular case?
I mean, certainly a lot of what's going on is going to ride on Hal's testimony. The prosecutors know that. During their opening arguments, they made it clear, this guy is not a good guy. He is a liar, but, you know, he is someone who's pled to felonies as part of this case and is certainly looking for leniency in his sentence when it comes up. But all that said, they say he's credible. There's also a treasure trove of emails that have been read that have shown and backed up and records, attendance records within the governor's office that back up a lot of his claims.
Well, in fact, there's that famous photo that was shown, Ken Lovett, Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News the other day in court, of Pococo. They took him on a fishing trip. I don't know, could have been the Finger Lakes, could have been upstate, Lake Ontario, in which he had this big fish. I don't think it was a bacala, a big fish. And I know what Cuomo was saying through his intermediaries. He's probably speaking in Italian. Hey, Wagnon, start to cheat. Which means stay quiet, because you could be swimming with the fishes in Jamaica Bay, in Finger Lakes, or Lake Ontario, unless you take the code of Omerta. As we continue here in the drive home at 5, Trudeau Jr., he has decided, as the Prime Minister of Canada, to be super politically correct. Look, still involved in negotiations to redo NAFTA, according to the provisions provided to him by our President, Donald Trump. Seems to be getting along splendidly with our President, as opposed to the President of Mexico. But that's not the issue here. It's his political correctness. In fact, listen to what Trudeau Jr. has stated that we should all be saying when referring to all of us.
Maternal love is the love that's going to change the future of mankind. So we'd like you to look
at that. We like to say people kind, not necessarily mankind, because it's more inclusive.
There we go, exactly.
We can all learn from each other.
People kind. Okay, you've established your political correctness. Well, let's get down to the nitty-gritty, because there's a war footing. Remember the old movie Canadian Bacon, where we launched an invasion on Canada? Oh, you can remember. It was a classic. We need to threaten an invasion of Canada north of the border. Now, I know the president hasn't discussed building a wall, you know, all the way from the New Brunswick area in the northeast sector over to British Columbia in the Western sector. No, no, he hasn't discussed that. And I'm not suggesting that they're anywhere near the illegal aliens coming across the Canadian border as there are the Mexican border, although there are some. What I'm talking about is the Canadian geese, a.k.a. the Canada goose. I have railed about them. I hate them. I loathe them. I despise them. They have not only come in, they have colonized whole sections of our tri-state area. And how do you know that even when you can't see them? Because the moment you approach them, they snap away. They snarl at you. It's the poop that they leave behind everywhere. And most importantly, they have taken roots here. Now, I would have thought, okay, you are flying south, you know, down to Hollywood, Florida, where there are a lot of Canadian flags of expatriates of Quebec and Ontario who now live there. But oh, no, no, these Canada goose, these Canadian geese, they don't fly down to Florida. They cop a squat in New Jersey, in Connecticut, in Pennsylvania, and most especially New York. And it's now affected one of our billionaires, that's right. So much so that Tom Golisano, you remember the name, three times up he challenged George Pataki as an independent candidate to become governor of the state of New York. Three times he went down for the count, but he spent a lot of scandal. And he was the Buffalo Sabres owner, made his fortune in Rochester, has a house down in Florida, and recently married Monica Seles. You remember her, the great tennis player from Germany. So, think of it. Here it is. He's upstate near the Finger Lakes. It's one of his many homes. He has grandchildren. He has guests. He rolls up into the driveway and finds 100 to 200 Canada Goose, a.k.a. Canadian geese, parked on the lawn. He tries to chase them away. They come squawking at him and pooping all the more. And what has Tom Golisano said to the local officials who have turned a blind eye to this invasion from the north, from Trudeau land? He said, I'm not going to pay my property taxes. Hell no, why should I? Look, I can afford it easily to this Finger Lakes town, but because you are not doing anything to eliminate this population, to bag them and tag them, to deport them, to gas them, in any way, shape, or form, to eliminate their poop that is everywhere, my protest is I'm not paying my property taxes, and I'm hoping that everyone else within the sound of my voice on the 50,000 powerful watts of sound here at WABC will likewise join the Golisano protest, because I've seen the poop everywhere. I've slipped on it. I fell on my tukus while playing with my kids, and my kids couldn't go on the seesaw, couldn't go on the swings in a playground. This is a double Udiscrazia. I remember in Saddle River, remember the last home of the Udiscrazia, Richard Nixon president, right? I fell right on my tukus there.